child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.
Someday, yeah, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnell Doré, and joining me today is Elaine Durbach. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Arnell.
Naturalistic Support is a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On Naturalistic Support, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support. This involves you calling us to talk about yourselves as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877, and today's topic is dealing with loss and grief. So what is grief? Elaine?
Well, grief's a natural response to loss. It's the emotional suffering you feel when something or someone you love is taken away. The more significant the loss, the more intense the grief tends to be. You may associate grief with the death of a loved one, which is often the cause of the most intense type of grief. But any loss can cause grief, including the death of a loved one. Okay, we've said it, the death of a loved one, the divorce or relationship breakup, loss of health, losing a job, or loss of financial stability, a miscarriage, retirement, death of a pet, loss of a cherished dream, or a loved one's serious illness, or the loss of a friendship, loss of safety after a trauma, even selling the family home, loss of your familiar living place.
Now, in recent years, both Elaine and I have experienced the loss of a person central to our lives. In my case, through a breakup with my romantic partner, and Elaine's through the death of her husband in 2024. So, Elaine, you've personally had one of the most intense losses one can experience, sudden death of your husband and partner after 30 years of marriage. Can you tell us about how you've coped?
You know, Arnell, it's been interesting. Sounds like a little cold. It has been interesting. It's been so strange. I think that we were very open with one another. We said most of what there was to be said. So there wasn't the frustration you can have if you've held back, if there are things that you're desperate to say. But on the other hand, so much of my identity and my daily rhythm was tied in with my husband. He was very much a homebody, and he really shaped our home life in a way that some husbands don't. So that's been a huge adjustment.
Yeah, yeah. You know, from what I've observed, having had your community around you seems to have helped.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, definitely. It's been enormous, and especially the first few weeks. My son and I were surrounded by people all the time, and it was incredibly helpful. He actually turned to me at one point and said, "The worst thing that's ever happened to me has happened, and I'm happy." And in moments he was, because his friends were all around him.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't hurt that you guys lived in the ethical culture building.
That too. That was very helpful.
Yeah.
The society was very supportive. The people that, you know, our fellow members were wonderful.
Yeah. You know, with community, I mean, today, unfortunately, there's so many people who lack a connection to a community that can help support them during challenging times.
Oh, I don't know how people come through it without that kind of support.
Yeah, it seems very difficult. You also changed your environment, right? You moved to a new apartment last year. Do you think that helped?
You know, I lived in the same place for, 8 months after Marshall had died. And I found that incredibly difficult. I took over trying to do what he'd done, looking after the building. Hmm. And I was completely unqualified. And around every corner, there was this reminder. So, yeah, moving to a completely new space and a space that wouldn't have suited him. It's a small apartment. He wouldn't have liked that. And that has definitely been a big help.
Yeah, that would seem like changing an environment can be helpful. But then again, not everybody can change their environment. I mean, it was great that you were able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, people who stay in the same space, you know, the silence, the... I mean, you've been through this. When a person you're used to having around is suddenly not around in that familiar space.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. It's very weird.
I remember the night before I moved into the new apartment, I looked at the empty half of the bed. And I thought, this is the last time I'll be next to this empty space that he used to occupy.
Right. No. Yeah, that's intense. Listeners, has there been a recent loss in your life that you're trying to deal with? Or maybe you've been struggling to deal with a loss for a long time? Give us a call at 212-209-2877 and tell us about it. Although my experience is minor compared to yours, Elaine, I also experienced what felt like a significant loss when, after 8 years of being together with plans for a shared future, my partner and I broke up. And it's a strange feeling that the person I lost connection to is alive and well, but it's my relationship with her that's died.
That can be more difficult. I mean, as awful as it's been for having my husband die, I think I've had an easier time than people who get divorced.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when there's acrimony and when there's things to fight over, that's even worse. I mean, that I haven't had. I mean, I had that with my ex-wife, and I went through that. But in this case, I didn't have that. But yeah, that's another kind of serious loss that can cause a lot of grieving.
Yeah, yeah. I think we see ourselves reflected. It's like a prism. We're reflected back to ourselves through these interactions with people. Somebody like your companion, I mean, she's still around. You still know what it would feel like. Yeah, extraordinarily difficult to suddenly not have that interaction, that reflection.
Yeah. I mean, some people manage to, you know, work out like ways that they can still have some friendly contact. But in other cases, it's just a clean cut. And that can be pretty wounding. Listeners, have you recently dealt with a significant loss? It could be the loss of someone you're close to, but as we said earlier, that isn't the only type of serious loss. A serious loss can involve losing your home or your job or even having a health crisis. Call us at 212-209-2877 and tell us about it. Or maybe you've tried to be supportive to someone who has experienced a loss. Call us and tell us about how you've tried to help or what it's been like. Again, 212-209-2877. I came across a clip on YouTube that I really liked. It was clinical psychologist, author, and widely followed TikTok and YouTube content creator, Dr. Julie Smith. She suggests, I thought that this was kind of interesting, that we commonly think of the pain of a loss as this thing inside of us, which hopefully, as time passes, is going to get smaller. But Dr. Smith offers a different perspective. Instead of the pain getting smaller, she thinks coping successfully with losses involve making our lives larger so that the pain is felt less. And she has all these props in her video. She communicates the idea. She has a small, transparent, kind of lucite box to represent your life. And then on the inside of the one side of the box is a large red dot which says pain. So that's supposed to represent our experience of pain. And then she puts into the box this black ball that takes up a large part of the box to experience the loss. And when the black ball is large relative to the size of the box, it triggers the pain response. So it's very easy for the ball to meet that side of the box that is the pain trigger.
Interesting image.
Yeah. She then explains that instead of waiting for the pain to get smaller and smaller, what we need is a bigger box, i.e. a bigger life, so that relatively speaking, the pain doesn't loom as large. Now, despite not seeing the visuals, I think the clip is worth hearing. So let me just play that. This is Dr. Julie Smith.
Imagine for a moment that this is your life, and this is the loss that happened to you. And here is the pain that's triggered every time you're reminded of it. Now, this grief is consuming your whole life, and that pain button is being triggered all the time. There is no room for anything else. Now, most people say that over time, the grief, the ball, gets smaller. So the intervals between those agonizing reminders gets a little bit longer and it gets a bit easier to function. But here's what I would change about this idea. It's not really the grief that shifts in form. It's you. As you do the painful work to build your life around this new reality that you never chose, it's the box that gets bigger. Making space in this new chapter for a meaningful life around the grief. So your strength doesn't come from shrinking the pain, but from growing a life that's big enough to hold it. I'm a psychologist. Follow for more.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's a challenging call, because so often when you're feeling that sore, you don't feel you have the energy or the courage to take on new stuff.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, depending on the person, you know, what constitutes making our lives bigger is going to vary. I mean, for some, it might involve pursuing a new activity like volunteering in the community. And for others, it might mean delving deeper into their career. And for still others, maybe putting more effort into forming new friendships or new romantic relationships. But like you say, none of these things are easy when your sense of loss is intense. But the idea of focusing on making our lives bigger really resonates for me. In my case, it's meant throwing myself into the project of promoting naturalistic humanism through working on getting my book published, founding the Center for Naturalistic Humanism, and doing this radio program each week. Yes, you guys are therapy for me.
And I think it's taken a lot of your passion for the subject to get you doing it, even when you might not have felt like it initially.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, there are people who don't many people don't have something that they care as much about as I care about this. And if I didn't have it, I shudder to think what that might have been like for me. Because, you know, having this is, I mean, it's a big responsibility, but it also, you know, it doesn't make the pain of the loss disappear, but it definitely helps.
Yeah, and in your case, it gives you another source of pleasure, satisfaction. I mean, I was thinking about learning to dance, and I thought, that's not going to be a source of satisfaction. That's going to be a source of humiliation.
Well, it certainly would be a distraction. I mean,
I'd be busy, that's true.
You'd be busy, yeah. You know, I also recognize that the relationships I've lost to death, or simply parting, as in the case with my ex, wouldn't be as painful as long as I have sufficient friends and community around me. But having sufficient friends and community around is no small feat. And it kind of feels like as we get older, it gets increasingly harder to make new friends.
And you've been through a rough couple of years. You've had a really tough time with losing friends.
I just lost one of my closest male friends, who guy who joined my band in 1981, and we've been close buddies ever since. And he just passed away last month. Callers, have you been able to make new friends recently? How did it happen? Making friends is really a key part of surviving loss and grief. Have you wanted to make new friends but haven't done so yet? Call us and tell us about it. Our number is 212-209-2877. I think we have a couple lines free. You should be able to get through. 212-209-2877.
I'm intrigued by this idea.
Go ahead.
In making friends, finding new interests. And there's a delicate line between trying to fill the gap, substitute, or coming up with good, new, healthy connections. Like I found after I lost my sister, 7 years older than me and my absolute idol and my role model. She was my chief cheerer. She was wonderful. And she died at the age of 60. I found myself so envious of other people with sisters.
Mm.
You know, somebody else's sister came to visit. I wanted to go with them to have lunch. I wanted to hang out with them and be part of their sisterhood.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted sister substitutes.
Yeah, that's completely understandable. I'm sure some of our listeners has probably gone through that too. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's not like you begrudge other people who still have siblings, but it's kind of like, you know, you seeing something that you no longer have and you long for it.
And if people complained about their sisters, oh, that was hard. The same now when I hear people complaining about their husbands. You know, you want to say, you don't understand. You know, appreciate them while you've got them. And of course that's not fair, because it can be a totally different relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, death, I mean, you know, when you're looking at the death of someone, I mean, that's, if it's someone we're very close to, that's the most significant kind of loss. And maybe you can read a little bit to us about death. You know, nearly everyone's had to deal with the death of someone important to them.
Look, dealing with death, many people are comforted by two ideas. First, that everything that happens, happens because it's part of God's plan, in their view. When a person we love dies, although we might deeply miss them, some believe that it's all part of God's plan, and you know, that can be a comforting idea. Another way that people comfort themselves in the wake of a lost loved one involves having faith that the person who died actually continues to exist in an afterlife, and that ultimately you and they will be reunited. Now, I had not quite that sense with my sister, but I used to consult her I felt that she was still present and still guiding me.
Wow.
I would hear what she had to say. Not audibly, but it would come at me very clearly.
Yeah. Elaine, we have some callers on the line. Let's get those.
Great. Okay.
This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Yeah, my name is Jonathan, and I'm calling from New Jersey.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, Jonathan.
Yeah. I love your conversation, and I have experience with that, so I just want to share it so that I can help other people.
Yeah, definitely. Tell us.
Everything in this world is about God. Once you have God, you can stand everything. So I remember the day I lost my mother. That was the terrible thing because I didn't have a father when I was on. God was my father. So what happened was my mother was everything. So one funny day, my mother went somewhere. It didn't come and it's late. And I thought I'm going to die because I won't have any food to eat. So I like the way the dictionary put it. It has two words, G-R-I-E-F. And then G-R-I-E-V-E, they are all the same way. But the way it's expressed, it said deep sorrow,
yes.
Especially that caused by someone's death. And I associate the lady that died through this ice nonsense that is going on.
Yeah.
Somebody who was just there and hasn't done anything, and somebody's foolishness will let somebody die. Those are the terrible things.
Yeah. I mean, Jonathan, you know, our program tries to grapple with, I mean, a lot of people, as we were just reading, a lot of people have comfort in, you know, believing in a faith-based idea like God and the afterlife and heaven and all that. But what happens to those people like us who don't believe in that, who aren't comforted by that? And that's what we're trying to offer people, an alternative way to deal with it, because not everybody has that, takes comfort in those spiritual ideas.
Yeah, I understand. Even if you don't have God, there are two ways.
Yeah.
We were created by God, and He breathed in us His breath. So even if you don't know Him, you have something. You know there is something. And those who are not godly people to are those aliens, and those who the devil has as his children to, they are separate. They don't feel anything because they don't have soul.
Yeah, so, I hear you, Jonathan. Jonathan, we have a couple other calls we got to get to, but thank you for your call and appreciate it. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hi, is it me?
Yes, it's you.
Oh, hi. Okay. My name is Jeannie, and I'm calling from Long Island.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. Well, I'm calling to let you know that, you know, death of a child is particularly devastating.
Yeah.
I think
and
the most
I
difficult
lost
of all.
My son at the age of 32 in an accident.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So...
How long ago was that, Jeannie?
This is going on, say, 2011, so it's going on 15 years.
Wow.
But I have to
You have a very young voice, Jeannie. You don't sound more than 32 yourself.
I don't hear you very well. Could you speak up a little bit more?
You have a very young voice. You don't sound older than 32 yourself.
Oh, I'm 76.
Okay,
wow.
That's great.
Yeah, lovely, clear voice.
I have a
32-year-old as well. My heart goes out to you. I can't tell you how deeply.
Well, it was very devastating. He was not in this country. He had a surfing accident abroad. But I have to say, you know, after all these years have passed and I've come to have some peace with it, you know, that he died a beautiful death. He died the death that he... would have wanted.
Yeah,
you know, the ocean.
He was on
was
the ocean.
Second home to him, and
he was on the ocean when it happened.
Yes, it was a surfing accident.
Yeah.
As you say, his choices.
You know, to say, you know, like in his second home, it was a very clean death.
Yeah,
you know, and I thought...
So how have you coped?
Well, I have coped because I have a spiritual practice. I do have faith in God. I meditate. I'm connected to people who are clairvoyant, clairsentient. Not that I look to try to find, you know, a conversation or a communication with him, but at the time of his death, I did reach out to these friends of mine who sent, you know, shafts of bright light and energy to my son. But, you know, it was his destiny. It was his time. You know, some of us are short lifers. We come in at, you know, to this existence here, and we are given an agreement that is rather short to fulfill your agreement.
Yeah.
And others of us are, you know, the opposite.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, ideas like this and just feeling that a lot of this is the pristine truth as far as my belief system is concerned has helped me tremendously.
Yeah, look, if you've got a system that gives you comfort and works for you, you know, more power to you, Jeannie. And we have a couple other calls we got to get to, but thank you. Call us again.
Thank you for this call.
Yeah, thank you, Jeannie.
You're very welcome.
This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from? Hello? Okay, maybe we don't have that caller. Reg, do we still have callers? Because we were supposedly had about
Yes.
Okay, hello. You're on the line. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Gwen.
Hey, Gwen, how are you?
I'm okay. Okay. You know, I have a very my husband died 9 years ago. My father died in September. My father was 102. My mother's 99.
Gosh.
They are married for 80 years. My father did not want to die. I stayed with him for the 18 days in the hospital, and it was very, very difficult. However, it was so strange. The minute my father died, my mother was on one side of the bed and I was on the other. My mother looked over at me and said, "I'm so sorry your husband died." And I'm like, "Okay, but it was your husband."
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So we left, and my mother has gone into this story of my father has left her. And, you know, he got another girl pregnant. And I understand, my mother's 99 years old, okay? And she feels bad, but, if this is who he really wants. So I'm saying that my mother has dissociated. I think I'm using the word correctly here.
Wow,
and
sounds
so
like
what
it.
I didn't do was I didn't do any service because I thought it would be too upsetting for her to have to bring her into a room where she had to confront this. And so
very wise.
I sit with her and I tell her that Dad died, and she is shocked. Each time I tell her, she's shocked. She can't believe it.
Hmm.
My mother hasn't cried. I mean, she gets a little welled up. Understand, she's married to this man for 80 years, and understand he's in the bed not going on because he adored her, okay?
Yeah,
They were totally in love. And he
had he been sick a long time?
No, my father, I really know that my dad could have made it through this. It was because of some very bad decisions that my sister made before I had gotten down there, which weakened him, and then it was really awful with the hospital. But ultimately, you know, people need to understand, hospitals do put people down like dogs. I mean, they do. They come in, they don't want them there for very long, and they want to medicate them with morphine. And, you know, I had said no to that because... I really didn't, you know, I wanted him to go when he was ready to go. I mean, he had a heart block, and when the hospital originally called me, they wanted to give him a pacemaker. And I said, you know, he's 102, and they said, yeah, but this is the only way. But my sister got into war with them, which made them hold off, and she took away his water and food for 3 days. So when I got down there, the pain that this man was in was unbelievable. And that's a legal way of killing somebody. You are allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So when they realized I was the power of attorney, and I said, you get that IV back in his arm now. At least that pain stopped, but a lot of damage had been done due to what the hospital did. And, you know, you can't sue them because if somebody is not going to make a future income, you can't sue them for negligence or anything else. So that's it.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
I got an up close and personal way. You know, it is A-okay in America to put people down. I am completely opposed to that.
Gwen, it sounds like, you know, you've had to deal with the loss of your father, but you've also had to deal with, you know, the difficulties of dealing with your mom, who's disoriented. That
right.
must be an ongoing challenge.
And this conflict with your sister.
Do you think I handled my mother the right way? Do you think this is the correct way of doing it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You go with what she is asking for.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's what she needs.
Yeah, some people think when people have dementia, you know, you have to say, "Oh no, Ma, he died," and don't you see?
No,
you can't. No. You can't. Yeah. You have to kind of work with them where they are.
Right. I mean, for the most part, we do. He had an affair all day, but then I'll have to sit down and, you know,
it must make her feel very young, and maybe it's easier to be angry with him, to feel that he walked out on her,
and
to feel that he faded.
Yes, some people really can't cry, and anger, and I think, I finally know her at 99, that anger has always been her way around grief. That's how she handles her grief, is through getting angry about things. And, you know, that's not the way I do it. She's, this lady's so complicated, so you can't put her out as totally dementia either, okay? She comes back, she comes back and forth, too. I had a date with somebody over Christmas, and she was like a laser beam, and she said,
wow.
I don't like him.
And she's 99. God, that's something.
Wow.
Married for 3 years, she's still, okay?
Yeah. Gwen, thank you for the call. It's great.
You're welcome.
Calls
I'm
again.
I'm dealing with both of, well, all aspects of this.
Yeah.
Your sister as well.
You got your sister, you got your mom. Yeah, you got your hands full. Thank you, Gwen.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. We might have one more caller on the line, and if we don't, Reg, let me know. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Attila from Long Island. How
Attila,
are you?
Nice to hear
Attila.
From you.
Hi.
Always good to hear from you, Attila.
My thoughts and heart are with both of you on your recent losses. Just wanted to say
thank
that
you.
To start off.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome very much. Wanted to cover a couple of bases. Definitely have three dimensions of loss to discuss with you both. And as far as my personal philosophy in general about life, I do believe in creative design, that there is a creator who did create us through evolution. And in continuance with that thought, you know, there's a beginning and then there's an end. And I believe that every day is a gift, and it's how we live. It's not how we die that I believe is the most important thing, because it's a gift from the Lord above, if there is indeed a Lord above. And part of my, I know I mentioned it recently when I called you recently, I do have that gratitude journal in my head or on paper that I try to do every day just to realize that there's things to be grateful for.
Yeah.
And that this existence is.
Yeah, and that's true. Even if you're not like under the belief of a supernatural creator or anything, gratitude is just a healthy experience.
Attila, have you been able to feel that when you're in the midst of grief, you know, when a loss is new in your life, you've been able to find comfort in that gratitude?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. As far as loss, recent loss, took me a long time to get over the death of my father. He only lived into his early 70s, and it was unexpected and extra hard to get over. And it took me such a long time to just not to have that such a constant part of my conscience.
Yeah.
And I just kept saying to myself as the years went on after he passed that, well, think about what we did have together and what we still have if we're thinking about how his life has affected my life, what he's given me physically and psychologically, etc.
So he's still a part of your life?
Right. He's always with me. He's there. I look like my father. I sound like him. I'm athletic like he was. And so he's still there, but not physically, at least not in the way we, the traditional sense.
Yeah.
As far as other loss, about 11 years ago, I had a personal loss with just the way, like you could say, a computer works on a sort of a language. There's a language, and it helps the computer to operate. And I had a loss in the sense of just what happened because of that insane, crazy social media. It just made everything sort of turn upside down in a sense, because through that social media, I was reliving sort of everything from like early childhood in a very serious way, day to day. And I was like reliving growing pains, reliving happy times. And it was like, wow.
This is through friends, through contact with people who were part of your life in those times?
Friends on Facebook that I haven't seen since fourth grade.
Yeah.
Relatives in Europe that I used to just contact and see once every couple of years, when either they would come here or I would go to Europe. And then it's like, there they are all the time, good and bad. And it's just like I decided, you know what, it's not healthy for me to stay on this stupid Facebook. I'm getting off because I have to live, I have to move forward.
And it that sounds like an excellent decision.
Thank you. It was keeping me too much in the past.
Yeah.
That's true.
A lot of intelligent people have come to that conclusion, they, you know, social media can be such a mixed blessing, it can be damaging.
Very, very, very much so. But it, of course, now 11 years later, I have no problem with it. Thinking that I even created like a dummy profile, and I just play around with different things that I'm interested in, but I don't keep in touch with any friends or family on it because it's just not healthy. So that's that as far as my personal functioning of my mind has gone, as far as a loss of how things were working in the for most of my life, and how I dealt with pain and this and that and just life stresses. And then that was all sort of uprooted. And as far as recent loss, it's of pets.
Pets can be a serious loss,
I mean, we had a family pet, and he lived to be 15, a mix, a golden retriever, chow mix.
Aww.
And he made it to 15. You know, a beautiful dog, and he had his chow, which they say gives him a bit of a temper. Like, I have some hun in me, which gives me sometimes a little temper, especially when I'm driving.
Yes.
But
your name's the dead giveaway there. Yes.
So I'm pretty much the whole family is living well and healthily as far as coping with that loss. But it's, you know, it happened just a few months ago in November.
Oh, it's so hard. I'm barely over the loss of my dog of 15 years. And he died over, Jesus, 17 years ago. And I'm still...
Oh, my gosh.
I still miss him. I still miss the dog.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And then we have another dog. We have a dog that is known to live to be about 14, a small-sized schnauzer. And he's still hanging in there. He's 14, but I could see
he's still going strong.
That turn towards the other direction of leaving us. And it's tough. He's not eating as much, et cetera. But I'm pushing him. I'm giving him that organically raised chicken and olive oil, and I'm pushing him to go on walks and doing what I can.
In retrospect, I decided that I kept mine going longer than I should have. You know, they just want to please us, and they'll put on a brave face and, you know, keep walking with their arthritic legs and just do whatever they have to do to, you know, to please us. But, you know, sometimes we have to just be merciful.
But, you know, I think that's maybe the purest form of grief, is losing a pet that you've loved. It's got none of the complication that we have with people.
Yeah.
It's been pure love.
Right.
Their love for us and ours for them. It's such a direct,
usually, yes,
clear
most of
feeling.
The time, unless you have a few scars on you that remind you when they bit you.
But you forgive them that as well.
Right. You're
we
like, well, them. He peed on the floor a lot, so it's no loss. Yeah.
No, never.
Yeah. Attila, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank
call,
you both very
call
much.
Us again. Talk to you soon.
Have a great day. Bye. Thanks.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good one. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Naturalistic Support right here on 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener-sponsored
Peace and Justice Radio.
On Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support is taking listener calls, offering a revolutionary new way to think about ourselves and reach out to each other.
I just wanted to call in to give encouragement to the last caller.
Right on where I am right at this moment.
You really hit the proverbial nail on the head.
I really connected with what you were saying about loneliness.
We are hardwired to help each other.
Getting past the blame, owning your own truth, letting go of judgmental thoughts.
I felt so fortunate to hear this.
You went through every single one of the things that I've been working on for my life. Now, you said all that. I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy doing? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You helped me so much.
Lost and all alone. I always thought that I could make it on my own. But since you left, I hardly make it through the day. My tears get in the way, and I need you back to stay. I wander through the night and search the world to find the words to make it right. All I want is just the way it used to be. With you here close to me, I've got to make you see that I'm lost.
And we're back. This is Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnel DeRay here with Elaine Durbach. Still there, Elaine?
Yes, I am.
Good. Those are some good calls.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah, we're taking your calls at 212-209-2877, and we're talking about dealing with loss and grief and how loss can be applying to a lot of different kinds of losses, not just death.
I'm so interested in the naturalistic approach, what naturalistic humanism says about dealing with loss.
Yeah. That is a important distinction, because most people in this world are reliant on a supernatural belief system to comfort them when it comes to loss. So, you know, just as our callers have said, you know, we had callers that, yeah, you know, talked about, you know, the recognizing the relationship they have with God as being instrumental in helping them, or, you know, believing in, you know, the afterlife. That helps a lot of people. But if you're a naturalist and you don't have that, you know, how do you think about loss? And from a naturalist's perspective, someone who dies is unaware that they're no longer alive. We the living are the ones who actually experience death. And even for those who believe in an afterlife, the death of a loved one still sentences the survivors to a lifetime without that significant relationship.
But as you point out, that having that vulnerability, having that capability of feeling pain means that you had something very valuable.
Yes, yes. Having which capability?
You know, loving somebody deeply.
Yeah.
Or valuing a job, absolutely loving a job.
Right, right. Absolutely. So, you know, it's recognizing that the loss is in perspective to the gain that you've had in your life. So if you've had this tremendous loss in your life, it's only proportionate as a loss to the incredible fortune you've had in having had that relationship that you care that much about to begin with.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And you say the only way to shield ourselves from that pain would be to not partake in the joys that make life worth living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But also, you know, part of what you lose when you lose a person to death or parting, but when you lose somebody like that, it's part of yourself that's also lost, right? So recognizing that what we're losing is part of us is dying as well, because of all aspects of being human, our identity is the least self-contained. Right? We're not ourselves.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah.
We're not ourselves because of our thoughts and our feelings. We're also ourselves because of the way we experience ourselves reflecting back from the world that surrounds us.
Absolutely. I mean, that's true in a job as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So for a human, even the loss of an inanimate object, like an address book.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or a cell phone with a record of our communications.
Oh, definitely.
Or a crash of our computer's hard drive.
These are terrible losses.
These can result in a significant diminution of ourselves. So, clearly, the loss of a friend or an extended family member has even a greater impact on the loss of our identity. And a close friend or a close family member, even more so. But, you know, for all that's lost, as you become the sole custodian of all that was shared between you and the person you knew and loved, in a way, everything about the person you knew becomes immortalized because of the closeness of the relationship. So
yeah.
In a way,
you're their afterlife. You're their continuation.
Yeah, you are custodian of those memories, and they are kind of embodied in you now. And even if you're the sole custodian, you know, personally, as I've gotten older, anyone who gets older experiences seeing many relatives and friends die, and now including five of my closest male friends. So males kind of die off a lot easier than females, it seems.
Yeah, they do tend to, yeah.
And, you know, as a result, you know, I've definitely lost a big part of myself, but the people we love change us profoundly, and we couldn't have loved them if we hadn't made ourselves vulnerable, letting them into our hearts and our minds, and consequently changing us forever. So, you know, we're going to, even without them in our lives, we're going to recall the moments we had shared, how they might have reacted to something that just happened. You know, that's something I'm sure you've thought of, Elaine, because,
oh yeah,
you know, I think of that all the time. You know, I think about how somebody who have lost, gee, if they were here right now, what would they have said, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we're much more aware of that stuff when they're not with us. It does get internalized. We think about those things in a way that we just took them for granted when they were around.
Yeah.
The loss makes us more conscious, more sensitized.
Yeah. So who somebody was who we were close with, who's gone now, and how they behaved are going to continue to live on inside of us. You know, sometimes consciously, but more often unconsciously. All of our relationships alter who we are, but none so deeply and permanently than those whom we've truly loved. And although we might forget some of our shared experiences for the rest of our lives, the impact of having known our departed loved ones are going to live on inside of us. And I'm sure you see that with the loss of your husband, that there's probably so much that you've internalized that came from him.
Yeah, absolutely. But in a very concrete way, even in my cooking.
Yes.
He was the cook in our household.
Right. So, but he never taught you how to cook. But,
nope.
But
he wouldn't let me near the stove when he was around.
Yeah.
But I'm doing things the way he did them.
Yeah. So you were kind of getting it by osmosis a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, for a naturalist who doesn't believe in, you know, an afterlife, life after death is achieved by the impact we have on the people whose lives we touched.
Yeah.
And that includes people who will consciously remember us, but also those who are affected by us and don't even realize that they were affected. And of course, there's progeny in our own family and young people in our extended family and even people in our community who we affect.
Yeah, indeed, absolutely. Every time I get into bed under the beautiful crochet blanket my mother made, she's part of my life again every night.
Yeah, so that's like a real material object she left behind, but some people just leave behind ideas like sayings, expressions, yeah, stories, jokes, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Silly expressions that we repeat because they used them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and then there's like our influence at work, you know, people who have gone, sometimes they'll change the culture of an office or of a professional environment. And then there's the physical things, you know, like you said, the blanket. But some people build houses. Some people build bookshelves. Some people build today websites. So now we're increasingly able to leave behind ever more vivid records of our lives. But you know what? We're going to have to go into that like at part two, because we are out of time, Elaine.
Oh my gosh, and there's so much more to say.
There is a little bit more to say, I think. So we're going to go into that. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support's Look at Dealing with Grief and Loss. I'm Arnel Doray, and joining me today has been Elaine Durbach. Thanks, Elaine.
It was really interesting.
Yep. Also, thanks to our fearless engineer, Red Johnson, and to Hilla Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of our program. Archived editions of Naturalistic Support can be found on our website at wbai.org and at equaltimeforfreethought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn. And stay where you are, because coming right up is the Katie Halper Show. And remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.